It's Wednesday, January 2nd, 2008, and you're listening to episode 85 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Luke.
My name is Adam.
And I'm sitting here right now with the thing of Jelly Belly jelly beans that I'm hesitant to eat during the show because I don't know what flavors I'm going to pull out. And there's some really skanky flavors.
It's like stuff off of,
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, that's the word I'm looking for.
Bernie Potts, every flavor beans.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I don't think I've told this story on the podcast, but a couple years ago I was working at a home building company right after one of the Harry Potter movies came out. And Jelly Belly was selling these little gag items that were the Bernie Bots or whatever they're called.
I have seen
jelly beans.
I've eaten.
And if you flip it over, the flavors include some normal stuff like cherry and whatever.
Right.
But then it also has
earwax,
vomit, pepper, grass. The only one I was brave enough to eat was pepper, and it did taste like a spoonful of pepper straight from the
Those
shaker.
Were so good.
And I smelled.
I ate the booger and the vomit.
I didn't
it
eat it.
Did grass smell like patchouli?
I just smelled the vomit one, and it was dead on. So being in an office environment where everybody takes all your candy, we decided to have some fun with this. Christian and I sat down. We dump out a couple boxes of these and very carefully separate them into the ones that are edible, which we went ahead and ate. And then we put the other ones, like vomit and grass and pepper and sardines, into this great big candy dish. And set it right at the edge of our cubicles, very visible, so anyone walking by would see them. And sure enough, maybe the next day, I'm standing there and this guy walks by. And truth be told, the guy was kind of an ass. So if there was not a nicer person this could happen to. And he walks by, reaches in, grabs a handful of them, and I'm just standing there by myself because everyone else in my department was gone. Pops one of them in his mouth, stops dead in his tracks. And I'm like, oh, crap, now I'm going to get it because I'm the only one sitting here. Stands there for a second, pops in another one and keeps walking. It's like, what is, like, did you lose your tongue and nom? What the hell is wrong with you? I'm sitting here eating vomit jelly beans. It's not a matter of he doesn't even want to confront me. He just eats another one and keeps on walking.
He probably thought that it was all in his head.
Dude, you are messed up. Anyway,
of course, he might have been just trying to spite you, realizing there he's playing a joke on me. These are bad jelly beans. You know what? I'm going to have another and walk away.
Boom! How do you think about that, Mr. Longhair?
Before we get back to Christmas stuff, we are going on into New Year's. In fact, this is going to drop, I believe, on New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve or New Year's Day.
No, New Year's Eve. Everyone listen to it.
Yeah. It's going to drop on Monday?
It'll drop on New Year's Day.
It's going to drop. It's going to drop somewhere.
Roundabouts
right
there.
Roundabouts the change of the Gregorian calendar.
Up? No, you're right.
It's going to drop Tuesdays.
Wrong.
It's the day after. It's going to drop on January 2nd. Ba-boom, I'm Adam.
All right.
Ba-boom.
Point being, though.
Can I just one up you guys and say it's going to drop on January 3rd? Because I see this is a pattern.
Actually, it's going to drop. When Dan posts the episodes, he actually posts them in Central Time, mind you. The day before Wednesday, which is Tuesday about 11 o'clock.
And the URL bashing starts way before that.
Yeah.
At 11 o'clock on Tuesday, which is January 1st. So that means that it will be available January 2nd to everyone else. At no point will it be available January 3rd, except for having been available January 2nd.
Well, I know the URL bashing does happen because I'll post an episode sometimes as early as 5 or 6 o'clock.
And somebody has already started the review thread.
It's not actually going to release until midnight. And yet I look out there and we have 50 or 100 downloads already on the episode. And it's just,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know we get
it's all me.
It's just you. Yeah,
I want to hear my edited work.
Right,
so
the point
bad.
Do you have Texas all
it's
the IPs from Microsoft?
Boot,
I went there. I went back there.
Oh, my God. Right. I was going there,
it's
dude.
A it's all cyclical coming right back.
Man.
I have Tex Hack our own site. Text has given us 400 digs. Anyway, because of
Fear the Boot, cheaters of the internet.
Because of about when this is going to drop, I decided that I'm going to make a New Year's resolution here on the air, live, in several days' delay.
Cut your hair. Cut your hair.
No.
Cut your...
All right, if you're a Fox
Shave
of Love,
head.
Settle down.
Grow a beard.
No, none of the... I might grow a beard if I go to
Ace. Burn yourself an effigy.
I'll go to Jesus. But... I make a New Year's resolution that within about 1 week, I'm going to try and answer all of my emails in the fear of the boot.
Why would you lie to the people like that?
You're setting people up for great disappointment.
Well, he said he was going to try, so he basically said nothing.
I'm making myself accountable here. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm warning some of you people in advance that if you sent me an email back in, like, let's say August, and you just now get a response, that don't be upset. Think of this as, wow, Dan's keeping to his New Year's resolution.
Speaking.
And then you can.
How long have you been away from the forum?
And then you'll have inspiration to stay on your diet.
You're going to be answering emails about the Ennies. Like, hey, why'd you guys get disconnected from the Ennies? Blah, 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 blah. And you're going to be like, that happened months ago. We're past it.
We've gone there twice now in one episode. Christmas stories. Adam, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go
first. I got an Ennie for Christmas.
Boom.
Three.
Phil shows up in my house.
I got that for you.
Oh. Yeah, that was nice of him.
Phil shows up at my house, crazy present, totally unexpected, brings me a box full of diapers. He's duct taped the top, and I'm like, Phil, Melina's not pregnant still. And he's like, oh, man, just open it. So I get my knife, I pop open this box of diapers, and what do I find inside but a diaper with a smushed and crushed Butterfinger. Poopy diaper all the way. And I'm like, wow, Phil, this is unexpected and creepy.
Was it powered by imagination?
It was not. However, the six-pack of Bud Light underneath it was.
Oh, beautiful.
And so, this is the way that Phil Hicks has bought my loyalty.
That's after Christmas magic.
Remember, insert dash coin live.com. Another shout-out for you, Phil.
When Christmas Adam moved, magic for Phil.
When Adam moved that diaper, he found the true meaning of Christmas.
Yes, that's right. Six-pack of Bud Light bottles. And Phil, I've already enjoyed it. By myself, because I'm an alcoholic.
I got
drinking, playing WoW in your underwear.
Playing Civ 4, but yeah, close enough.
I didn't get any regular barley and hops beer for Christmas, but I did put in, this is something our European listeners can probably possibly relate to. I asked one of my sisters to get me some Strongbow cider, just an English apple cider, because John introduced me to it at a little pub downtown.
I caught the bug in Europe and brought it back.
Yeah. So for Christmas, I asked if someone.
I also picked up drinking cider.
Well, I've been drinking cider for years, like Hornsby and Woodchuck.
Woodchuck.
But I've never had the Strongbow before until you took me to that one little Scottish Arms.
Have you guys had any Dickens cider?
No.
No.
Really? It's really good.
Was there a profane joke there, or was this just real cider?
Say it fast, buddy. Just.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks,
Luke.
it was just, it was so.
It's not even profane.
Plebeian that I was hoping that.
Plebeian.
Oh.
He went Roman on your ass.
I'm off the podcast.
But anyway, so I got some Strongbow cider. I lost some candy, though. Carla had me this year for stockings because in my family, we swap names. We don't buy for everybody. We just swap names. And she knows that I like candy. And in some cases, I like really juvenile candies, as one of my ex-girlfriends told me.
Because you're a girl.
All I hear is you like young candy in your wife's stockings. That's all I'm hearing.
Yeah. That's the, we got diapers for Christmas, too, but they're for Carla to wear when,
my God.
Dave just one-upped me. That never happens.
Hey, let's go on to a real topic now.
So, no, all right, there's a story here before we go into a real topic.
If it involves you in a diaper, I don't want to hear it.
No, it does not.
If it involves your penchant for infantile.
That baby's got really long hair.
No, I did come to find out, though, about a new subset of perversion I was unaware of, which is, it's a combination of furries and like pedophilia, like furries and diapers. And there's a
I
name.
Can't have this conversation. Let's move on.
There's a name for it.
I think the furries can combine with like anything. Have you played Second Life?
Yes. Second Life Safari introduced me to new perversions I never knew about.
I know. And we're going to peg Adam with them eventually. But the point is, getting back to the story. So Carla buys me some peanut butter cups. And then also she gets me some Fun Dips. She bought me a bunch of other candy too, but that's all irrelevant to the story. And she leaves these all sitting down. And I'm like, you know, that's a bad idea. We got three dogs and a cat. Somebody's going to get into these. And she's like, oh, no, I left the presents under the tree in all the previous years. They're not going to do anything until we go out for a couple hours, come back. And our living room is covered in orange peanut butter cup wrappers and those little white squares
and
of cardboard
feces
that go under the peanut butter cups and empty Fun Dip wrappers. And I thought maybe this had been just one of the dogs until the other one comes trotting up with green paws.
Nice.
At this point, we knew it was both of them. Only one of them got sick. Not in the house, even. Just got sick later. But, oh, I take that back. She did throw up in the house, but that was actually the following morning.
And that's what you get for not taking ranks in animal handling. Or oh. dots in animal care.
Oh, no, trust
what
me.
System Rangers, do you want to play here?
Not so useless, apparently.
We got plenty of rank, believe you me.
Oh, let's move on to something
serious. All right, yes, sex right now. While we're on this topic, let's do a little bit of something that's RPG-centric, since that's somewhere in what we do. Animals and role-playing games. Handling your animals and role-playing games.
We're talking about like furry role-playing games, like Iron Claw?
No.
There's rules on how to play a dolphin in Star Trek.
There's rules on how to play a dolphin in Blue Planet, I think. It's about dolphins.
Wow, I'm never going to play either of those games.
Well, we're not talking about those. I'm talking about NPC animals. This could be somebody's horse. This could be somebody's familiar. Somebody's animal companion.
You know what? I've actually never thought about this
riding
before.
Dragon.
Yeah, somebody's trained attack dog.
Charlie, come here.
Hey, we all saw the riding dog in the third edition manual and thought, hey, that's pretty cool.
That was actually kind of a cool
I'm
picture.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to say and I would have won as well.
Of all the dungeon punk pictures, that was probably the best.
Dungeon punk.
That's what third edition was. It's like, oh, look how hardcore. We have spikes and earrings. Dungeon punk rules.
Well, all right, let's in typical Fear the Boot fashion.
The passion.
Let's talk about
in
the Fear
typical Fear the Boot passion, let's go ahead and crucify someone. let's go ahead and analyze why this doesn't work.
The biggest two things that I see that cause this not to work.
I can already see where I'm going to abuse this. So let me go ahead and categorize myself in.
Well, my first one's going to be what we have come to call in my other group, Wild Kingdom.
That's not me.
Wild Kingdom is where it doesn't stop. Somebody goes out and purchases a dog and uses animal handler or whatever to train it a couple basic skills like fetch and attack. And
They teach it to have sex.
No, it's not
and
that.
And then procreate.
And then drink beer.
Then they buy a second one.
Life finds a way.
And a third one.
Life finds a way.
And a fourth one. And a tenth one.
And then you've got 25
doesn't
animals.
Freaking stop. We had this happen in a game. It was a D&D game.
A-O-E spell.
There was a Knights of the Dinner Table story
one
like
guy,
about this.
One guy at the table had his pack of animals outnumbering everything else on the battlefield.
Hey, man, if you can't win them with quality, you might as well win them with quantity.
I
want
to have enough spiders to have a template creature. Have a swarm. I mean, swarm.
When you have a low-level game, though, it ain't quantity. It is quality. When you're putting out wolves or boars or whatever, they have three-hit dice, and you're playing a level 2 character. And we had a battle like that. They took on like an entire orc camp, and this dude's trained attack boars walked the camp.
Trained attack
Oops,
boars.
You came across an evil druid who trained
natural
him
weapons.
You.
What do you want? What do you want?
What was the second one? Because this is, I think, where I'm going to fall into.
The second problem is you give someone an animal that is simply too powerful. Well, I'd say it's actually three.
I'm not going to go ahead and
number
say
two is too powerful. Number three is too much control.
I'm not going to say too powerful or too much control. I'm going to go ahead and toss this one out here. The animal is more interesting than the character.
I've seen that too.
Let me toss that one out there and say I may or may not be guilty of this.
I could potentially put that in too powerful. It's just powerful not in combat, but it's powerful like
the owner
presence.
Is awesome because it feeds me.
Yeah.
And you notice
well,
where my
you
first
can turn
person
this
pronoun
into an
was.
Article of comedy if you do it right. When I was playing D&D at this last con we went to, Derek, one of our forum users, Direwolf, I believe, had
D-Wolf.
A D-Wolf. Had a pre-made paladin for me that was just dumb as a box of rocks, but he had every horse feat that you could take. All these animal handling skills, and like I could do anything on the horseback, and that was the character.
Anything?
The paladin was just there. Yes, anything.
Oh. Bigfoot riding on a unicorn. But I, you know.
Speaking of that, the poster for Harold and Kumar 2. With Neil Patrick Harris riding the unicorn.
NPH.
It says, what would NPH do? I want that.
That was the best
badly.
Line from the whole Harold and Kumar one. What would NPH do? NPH was snorting coke off a hooker's ass and stole our car. NPH would never do that.
Guys, it was a dick move. I'm sorry. That's why I bought you dinner.
But it's, I love that yeah, movie. I've not just seen that with animals, though, but I've seen any number of things like that. I've seen characters where the magical weapon they have
yeah,
is
that's
more,
what I was gonna mention.
More powerful or more interesting than the
they're
character.
They're more interested in playing their sentient sword than they are the person.
Yeah, their mech or their vehicle.
Yeah, I can't say I haven't done this
some
with
some accessory is more interesting
minions?
Than the character is. Yeah.
I've done it with minions.
Retainers. Minions and retainers.
Retainers. I'll write up a character. He always has a minion Will, and I always like playing Will more than I like playing my character.
We had actually my first GM was notorious. You'd buy horses. You'd go in the dungeon. Horses were gone. He hated PCs having horses or any animals. So somehow they always disappeared. Well, yeah, it was like early. So that kind of thing. We didn't realize that was bad GMing. Dungeon,
they're going to die.
See, I mean,
come on.
We leave them outside and they'd just be gone or eaten.
With me, it's an. Damn it.
This is why your animals eat your funding.
We're sitting here. All right. Just explain what that's about. We're sitting here recording the podcast. And you guys know the story I just told. I came down here because we're trying to raise the energy level here on the podcast a little bit. This is actually our second take. First one was a little low energy. So we're trying to bounce back. So I'm like, oh, I need a sugar rush. So I go upstairs and get two packets of Fun Dip and put them on the table next to me. I'm sitting here recording the show. Adam reaches down on the floor and takes one of them from my dog who has snuck up behind me.
Who is licking your mouse pad where they were sitting right now.
She just snuck up behind me, ganked one of my Fun Dip packages right, I mean, from no more than like 2 feet away from me and had it on the floor.
Izzy has a few levels of a thief.
See? Dog more interesting than the character right there.
Yeah.
I guess so. That's very true.
Dog
outsmarting the car.
Yeah.
Dog outsmarting the
car. Marm outsmarting the park harp.
Dog
rolls man.
Dog rolls man.
Dog took 20. Dan rolls natural 1 on notice. But anyway,
can't take 20 on a stealth check, dude.
She's under.
When did we get so well versed in D&D? How did this happen?
She's under no duress, and failure would have had no penalty because I didn't spank her for this. So
she still can't take 20. She can't take 20 minutes and be like, okay, I'm going to be.
Plus, she's got a huge penalty for her hip dysplasia. Come on.
So anyway, the big thing I look for with animals is abuse. That I make sure, first of all, if the character is not supposed to have mental control over the animal's an NPC. Plain and simple.
Yes.
If the animal's a
I'm all over that.
If the animal's a familiar, an animal companion, a dumb animal, a trained animal, but they do not directly have mental control over it, I play it as an NPC.
What sort of animals do they have direct mental control over? I'm pretty sure even like the magical paladin mounts and stuff are their own.
Some
have their own minds.
I thought summoned animals you could control. I don't know.
I think you can. You have like 6 or 7 things you can tell them to do.
Right, but that's something I'm really summoning big on because that
peculiar institution.
That right there reduces a whole lot of the problems. The second thing is, don't let them. I'm very, very pushy about. I don't let them abuse the number of animals, and I typically do this through metagaming of like, dude, you can't have 10 attack boars. If you want one trained attack dog, fine, we'll talk. But if you take 10 trained attack boars, then.
Never trust a man who has a pig farm.
I'm going to kill 9 of them, if not 10 of them, in the first game sitting. And
wait,
I'm just
telling first
you.
First of all, you just said you're against abusive animals, and now you're going to kill them. I'm not connecting it here.
I'd say that's a funny pun, but I'm morally bound against lying.
I laughed earnestly, Luke.
Thank you, John. We are on the same wavelength on all but one thing.
I'm all sassy now as I'm. I can't believe that I got suckered by a dog on Fun Dip again.
Not only that.
I caught the dog. It was pretty funny.
And now my Fun Dip package is all wet.
But the Fun Dip's still fine.
It's not open. The Fun Dip inside is still fine.
Hey, dog slobber is cleaner than your butt, dude. So don't worry about it.
It is,
well,
actually.
Because I eat off my butt all the time. That
actually,
reassures me.
Dog's butt's cleaner than your mouth. I know.
Your own mouth is cleaner than your own butt.
I know that, too.
So. Other way around. Your own butt is actually cleaner than your mouth.
I know. I knew what you meant the first time.
Yeah, right. A point.
Oh.
That makes 2 girls, 1 cup a lot less gross.
No, it doesn't.
Right.
But the other thing that I look at is abusive use. For example, I've had
abusive use.
I had one player in particular who would always take a familiar. That was a flying creature, a hawk or an owl, and every single time anything happens, my familiar scouting ahead. We don't know what's going on. Well, my familiar's going to scout the path ahead. My familiar's going to fly over the Orcish army. My familiar's going to fly down the passage. So finally, I'm like, that's it. His familiar flew over an Orcish army. I rolled 3 dice. One of them was a natural 20. I'm like, one of them just took it down with a bow.
And then ate it.
Yeah, and
that
he's like,
orc hated Raven.
And I saw the Lost Battalion. It can happen.
And he's like, why would they even attack it? It's just a bird overhead. I'm like, have you read what the goblinoid hordes are like in Forgotten Realms? They're hungry. They eat everything. They eat each other. There was food.
And yet they love Elminster. How does that work?
Elminster feeds them.
He dances for them.
He dances for them.
He's a dancer.
You're a dancer.
I know.
A tiny dancer.
Hold me closer,
in my hand. Hold me closer, Tony Danza.
Now, this one I know I've mentioned on here, but something else I do to try and keep PCs from getting too attached to their animals or abusing them.
Kill them quickly?
No. This isn't. I've mentioned this several times on the show.
Kill them softly.
I take out my DMG.
With your song.
I go to that
man
random trait table. Give each animal two random traits.
My incontinent toad comes to mind.
John,
curious and incontinent
John
toad.
Had a toad familiar that was curious and incontinent.
It was worth the two constitution.
it was worth the two constitution. Man.
Have you ever played a sorcerer? Do you know what it's like to have 4 hit points? Well, it's easier to have 5.
A cat can kill you.
Let's see. Mike had a raven that was helpful and bumbling or something like that. And so every time he turned around, the thing would be like rearranging his possessions or trying to be helpful, but always screwing him up in some way. And this guarantees a lid on the number of animals that people will try and bring into my game.
Yeah, wouldn't you screw them with them?
I think that goes for anything you put into a game. If you screw the players over with them, they're not going to take them.
Not even screw them over, but you just don't let them.
Yeah, I definitely think that's GM.
Don't let them become pawns that the PCs.
Exactly. It's not screw them
to their advantage no matter what and to no other purpose.
It's not screw them, because for me, screwing the players artificially or railroading them is an absolute last fallback. But it's just a matter of I don't give them so much control and so much power that they're going to abuse it, because there's always going to be some drawback where they can't quite control this animal, or it's got a little bit of an attitude, or it's not going to help them out at the most critical moment in the way they expected. Just enough of a attitude or willfulness that they are not going to use these animals as a crutch to.
You've obviously not played Disney the role-playing game.
Disney the role-playing game.
Where animals are always helpful, always talkative, and generally just make life easier.
Scar isn't helpful.
He's a villain.
He was talkative. He's still an animal.
He was talkative.
He was talkative. It's true. He was Jeremy Irons. I issue all of my player characters a Tolkien eagle at the beginning of every game.
A Tolkien eagle.
Those guys are the definition of
DSX
machine.
Yes.
Hey, we're going to save the day again. Cool, huh? It's kind of our deal.
Hey, watch me be a hero.
We've saved 2 battles.
Look at this.
Oh,
we're
hobbits.
Awesome.
We're going to pick up some hobbits now as we wave our arms in the air.
Mount Doom, not anymore. See ya.
Now, why we could have just blown you in there in the first place, we don't know.
Because the Nazgul would have taken
him
down.
We'll fly you out.
Remember that goblin shooting an arrow that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah.
There, that's it.
Well, these are big eagles and
these are big
these
eagles.
These have D12
full
in hit
Tolkien
dice.
Magic.
There are many eagles. Many eagles.
Those eagles would have been far funnier if they had rescued them at slightly faster play speed to the tune of the Agony Sax.
Someone should synchronize all the Frodo Sam love scenes to Yakety
Sax. Here's the thing: since they're going to make the Hobbit now, and the Eagles are going to be
making
in that,
two Hobbits,
they are making two.
Yeah, I think they're cutting the story in half or whatever.
Yeah, but it's going to be like, oh,
that's
great,
so stupid.
We're going to see the Eagles win again. Hey guys, we're so awesome!
It's the Eagles. You know all the complex conflict the characters have to solve.
We can fly over
Let's
terrain.
Let's just fly over
and see ya.
But only when we want to.
It's like the quest in WoW. Go find this part. Okay. You fly on in. You don't aggro anything. And then boom.
What if I unleash? You guys are besmirching Tolkien. We've gone from lovingly ribbing his old dead carcass into
making fun of the Eagles.
Because
they're 68 druids. All right.
They are 68 druids.
All right.
And they play for Philadelphia.
Our other topic for today is handling factions within a role-playing game.
PCs win.
PCs lose.
There.
What? These are factions. We've set ourselves into them.
They're the names of them.
Oh, that's true.
I'm the PCs win faction.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Fair enough.
Ooh, excellent.
Cobra, G.I. Joe, Decepticons, Autobots.
We have both. All right. Good. And we even have Deadlock.
Eagles and everybody
actually,
else.
I brought this topic up, but Oscar, I really don't Felix. Have a strong opinion on this one way or another.
Rimmer and Lister.
All right. Well,
ooh.
Let's at least define what we're talking about here. We're talking about handling factions or organizations within your role-playing game. And we're talking about things here that are bigger than two or three PCs. But we are not talking about things that are like nations or empires, because now you're really getting more into setting building. And I realize that factions and organizations can have a big impact on the setting. For example, pre-World War II Mafia in Sicily. You know, they can obviously have a very major impact on the setting, but we're talking about something that falls between.
Actually, post-World War II Mafia in Sicily does, too.
Well, yeah, that's Point being, though, we're talking about something that falls between two or three guys working together and a nation or an empire. Examples that we give, yeah, the mafia. This could be, Luke brought up earlier as a joke, but it's a very good example, is Cobra. If you, you know,
that wasn't a joke. Yeah. Cobra, awesome.
Cobra
would never win, and no one ever dies.
Cobra would be a good example of a faction. We'll be seeing them again. They're making a live action G.I. Joe movie.
Expedition, Caverns of Time, Thralmar. These are all very good factions.
I think really you can divide factions and how you're going to handle them kind of into, well, I came up with a couple categories. You could make sort of a grid, and I don't know any.
Why do things keep getting more complex?
No, no,
first, it's a nested list. Now it's a grid. Next, it'll be a matrix. Then a Punnett square.
Oh my God! I did Punnett square. Punnett square. Like
this is a 2x2. This is, would be a Punnett square. So.
Oh come on!
But the point being,
you got the recessive genes, brother.
This would be more interesting once I get to like 3 and 4 dimensions.
2x2. The end of the.
But I don't think we need to approach this in the 2x2. But I came up with. There are two things when looking at a faction that kind of determine how I handle designing them. One,
why?
All right. Well, okay, this was not one of mine. Go ahead, Adam. Go with why.
Why? What is the point of this NPC faction or this PC faction? Why are they there?
They're interesting.
Is that all you're going to put them there for?
Pretty much. That's why else would you? They make things more interesting because it's more complex than having one guy that hates you.
Okay. All right. Well, let's break
against you.
Let's break down interesting in the two categories. Plot serving interesting and flavor text interesting.
Yes.
You just did one axis of my grid. If you look up at the big board,
I'm not looking at your big board. This is my topic, and I'm not looking
at big board.
Setting versus
your axis.
Their purpose could be setting, or their purpose could be plot. Okay, or maybe both. But the point
probably both. If it's worth having an organization,
I would hope both. But the question here is this something that's just in there for flavor because they're interesting setting?
It's in there to sell the box set,
or is this in there for?
Do you
some
want to be a Red
specific...
Wizard today? Buy this box set.
Or is it in there for some specific plot purpose? For example, within my games, there are organizations or factions that are in there specifically because the PCs might be able to win the favor of these organizations, which means that even while they're on the outs with larger nations
by
or
collecting
empire,
lots of random trinkets from across the land, so they raise a reputation. Yeah.
You stole that from the first take.
I did steal it from the first take.
But they're in there so that the PCs have someone who might offer them information, might kind of come in to save the day if they get in over their heads, if they get too far off the beaten track, might give them little tips to nudge them along.
If they threaten to end the campaign by doing something stupid and you don't want it to be over yet.
That's always a concern.
The other thing that I came up to cut them down by is whether they're PC or NPC. And by PC, I don't mean exclusively PC, but is this a faction that your players are even meant to be a part of? Or is this one of those things like your players should never, ever be a part of this faction for some reason? They're too powerful. They're too elusive. They're too central to the plot. They're too mysterious, whatever the case is.
As a player, that always strikes me as something irritating. Like, it's almost as though... Like with the big bad guy.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You put that out there, and the big bad guy always has access to spells you could never learn.
Not always. Something.
Super wizards. And
not if
cooler.
You have a good GM and a good campaign setting that makes it fair, but most don't because it's easier.
I think it falls into the category of other people can do cool things that they show your PCs that you'll never be able to do. And that always irritates me.
See, that's I'm anti that. I'm all for the PCs doing
cool
things.
Well, but
do you
think that's true of factions as well? Because keep in mind that, I mean, we're not necessarily talking about powers or ability, because perceivably, I mean, you could have...
I know, but we're not also talking about, well, realistically, the PCs are not going to organize a 2,000-man march on whatever.
Right.
But
I've seen some try.
Also, realistically, the 2,000-man march isn't going to look at the PCs and say, hey, we can have some use for you.
Right. Well, my point, though, being here, that just because you can't join one 2,000-man march, to use your phrase, doesn't mean that necessarily there's any big deal in saying you can't join this one. Because this one is, you know, for whatever plot reason or setting reason, is just not meant to be joined.
It's a hard-coded plot element that's not among the many branching trees of player choice. You're allowed to have those. A few of them, anyway.
I mean, organizations, for one thing, as we've mentioned, they fill out the setting. They make it more realistic because people join into groups because groups have more power than a single person. They can do far more than one man can because they can pool the resources, they can pool... More resources. They can pool stuff. That's what they do. They pool resources and to use it to whatever ends they need to. And that is I mean, if you're going to have a campaign setting, you need to have groups to do that because it's
why?
Because it's real. It's verisimilitude. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want to have groups? What?
I think it's verisimilitude.
I don't care.
Okay.
It's a big word.
Well, I think that if we're going to talk about this, we should start at the beginning. Why bother?
I think I just said so. I mean, it's real. Why would you bother? Because people gathering into groups is what people do because it gives them more power and it gives them more resources.
Gaming groups give me power.
I think it also gives them more reason. One of the things that I like about settings that have factions I can be a part of is it instantly gives me a way of drawing my character into the setting. That if I'm a part of this particular vampire clan or I'm a part of this particular military organization or secret society, that I already know here are a couple traits, and I don't want to play the archetype or stereotype, but here are a couple traits my character is going to have. Here's a few goals he might have. Here's a few people he's probably going to know. I can instantly context my character within the world, that he's not just like, because this is a huge problem I have, particularly in the Cursed First games, that the players just drop from the sky into the plot line. And if their backgrounds are not well written, they just seem so out of place that they're just,
I see that.
They're here for no reason other than because, well, they're playing
that's
the game.
The setting.
Yeah, that's the setting. And this is where you are. And I like factions because it gives my characters a way of instantly being drawn in. But unlike something as big as a nation, there's probably some focus or purpose to it because nations gather together for a variety of reasons, but they're usually fairly broad. There's great diversity within a nation, but within a faction, they're probably gathered together around a single purpose or creed. So there's already going to be some kind of
starting point, some sort of commonality,
some kind of congruity between you and all the other people that are in this organization. And I think it's great in that it also offers the GM something to work with because the GM now knows, okay, these are some of the goals you're going to have, or if I need to pass you information or get you back on the plot.
Right. It sets the realistic expectations of the PCs and how you're going to interact with them.
Right. Yeah. And when we talked about White Wolf, I think they did an excellent job of this in their various books.
What White Wolf does is here's your PC. Here's the five big groups you can join. Here are their general relationships to one another. So you can build upon that. And, I mean, it is all about conflict between groups. I mean, it's a very personal game, but it's easy to take up to a group level. I mean, that's when I ran my St. Louis Vampire game. It was all about the Covenants. It was all about join the Covenants, which ones, why, and the inter-Covenant conflict. That's what it was about.
The Denny's Covenant versus the Waffle House Covenant.
Oh, the Awful House.
Waffle Hose.
Assuming
it's my icon on Steam.
Well, assuming your players are a member of the factions, because let's keep talking about PC factions here for a minute, it also guarantees there's something you know they care about.
Yes.
It's
an easy way to instantly draw them into caring about something.
I have run multiple games where it's like I put down a plot point, and these were typically very poorly constructed games, but you know, on multiple levels, there's failures at the player and GM level.
Dan's
here.
Hidden shade of humanity.
Uh-oh, are we going to hear a Dan GM story?
We almost heard it, but then he put it off on the players again. But it was so close.
I said failure at players and GM. But
he split it.
Share
like
shame.
A pork crust.
Share the burden.
Share the load.
But you put it down. I put down a problem like, okay, here's this maiden that needs saving. They're like, who cares?
Is she made of gold?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go do this. And all of a sudden, I'm left.
And I can't disagree with that
mentality. How much experience points did my character get for becoming a man?
Yeah, and at that point, the best I can offer is the metagame thing of, okay, if you guys don't go save the maiden,
then the game's going to end in two sessions.
We're too far back into. That is a player GM problem, again, where if you're going to sit down and go, hey, guys, this is a game I want to run. Buy into the first hook so we can get on with
it. Well, right, I agree,
game.
But I'm just saying that this is a possible solution to
right, that's
that.
One of the things that facilitates
factions,
kind of bridging that metagame.
Right, factions enable that, because
yes,
if you're
when Mario joins the Mushroom Kingdom faction, he wants to go save the princess.
Well, I think that one of the things you can
raise
do
the
is,
red star of the people above the keeps of
I think one of the things that you can do is when you tell your players to make characters, already include them in the thing. Listen, you guys are going to be playing people who are with this organization, and have them write that into their backstories, because at that point, then the players are like, oh, well, this is already there. This is already assumed. I'm already okay with having an investment in this organization. Let's go from there. Because then you kind of cut out the well, you should care about this organization, metagame, and then in-game conflict between the GM and the players.
And, I mean, it's a good starting point you're talking about. I mean, I completely agree with that in one type of game, but I also don't like limiting people like that unless I want to run a game where, like, hey, you guys are all part of the Harpers, or hey, you're all rebels.
I don't look at it more as limiting. I look at it as a starting point, because the first couple games are always crappy for everyone.
It all depends on what game you're running and what you want to play.
I'll agree with that.
It's good. It's bad. It can be both.
I agree.
Most of the time, I agree. It's very good. It's a very good starting point to tie everybody together to start out.
Though, Luke, I do just want to put on the table that I would probably rather eat steak knives than play a Harper. But
I'm not disagreeing with you there at all.
It's Lee Harper. He wrote To Kill a Mockingbird.
That was Harper Lee.
How to Kill a
Mockingbird. Damn it.
It was Harper Lee, and that was a she, yeah.
Whatever.
How to Kill a Mockingbird. Have you guys seen that video?
Hey, how much have you guys had to drink? Because this is not nearly as much as me.
Enough to drive on legally?
Something else I found.
Unlike you.
Something else I found that's great with factions, even those that you don't intend the players to interact with, you never know what your players are going to hook on to. And because factions tend to be centered around creeds or goals or missions or whatever, it's interesting to watch how, as the players start to learn things about them, that they suddenly decide they want to have more to do with a faction, or they want to work harder to stop a faction.
And because they start to romanticize those ideals?
Yeah, sometimes a character, and I've had this before when I write anything, whether it's prose or role-playing games, where I have found there are people sitting at the table where I've written something and they understand it better than I do. And
it's not that they understand it, but they relate to it.
Oh, I'd say even they understand. Well, maybe because they relate to it, they understand it better than I do. But they're like, yeah, they're doing this and this and this, and it's because of this, and that's going to lead to this. And I'm sitting there, and it's like, you know what?
Thank you for writing my plot.
Yeah, it's like,
appreciate that.
Hey, you know what? Yeah, that's how it happened.
I had no idea, but you're absolutely right. I mean, there's prose I've written where I've had to basically credit, you know, some individual understood a character better than I did. And I've had to credit that, yeah, the development of this particular character or whatever came from this person, because I wrote the character, but then they related to this person far more than I could.
Are these cliff notes about books you haven't written?
No, these are actually cliff notes of books that I have written while dorking around and never intend to publish, because I wrote them while I was young and they suck. But
I suffer from a lot.
If you want the
novels written,
yeah. If you want the,
we'll start with me.
Complete disclosure there.
I tell you, in game, I don't think I ever have a problem with the main organizations, because that's something you're going to have to deal with when you're making up your setting, making up your world.
All right, let's roll into the side organizations.
I was going to say, if you know what your PCs are going to deal with, both organizations they can join and ones that are against them, you know how to detail that out, how to set up whatever hierarchy you need. But the trouble comes in with the side factions, the small stuff that play a role.
Flavor crap.
Yeah, but you don't know how big a role. So it comes into, do you just make up basically the movie studio set where the PCs can look in and, boy, it sure looks real, but if they start digging deeply, they're going to find out, oh, wait, you really didn't plan
crap,
for this.
Oh, crap, this gaming session ends.
Well, I'd have to go back to, I think Adam keeps asking the operative question here. Is,
why?
Yeah, why? That when you are going to start, and we talked about this with Keith Curtis with map development, about how when you're placing, you're drawing cities. Up your maps, you're placing your cities, you're doing whatever, that the thing you have to ask is, why is it here? What's the history behind it? What's the drive behind
what's
it?
What's the point? Because
what's the
frankly,
point?
The history, the drive doesn't matter.
Right.
Are you going to use it? Because that's the first question. Right. Well, am I going to use it? But, and then what am I going to use
well,
it for?
Well, that's the old debate between, is a world an organic extension of its own history, or is it a playground for you to roleplay?
But the point being, though, that if
I agree.
And if you know why you're putting a faction in there, that right there is going to help you develop it to the level you need to and in the direction you need to. That the point of a faction is just to add color to a city. That you go into a city and there's some organized crime group there that really isn't supposed to do anything. It's just an undertone that
stick them up, see? Yeah.
That this is, you know, 1960s or 1970s Las Vegas or whatever.
Oh, sweet.
Then, okay, you know exactly how far you need to develop them. You know, you maybe need a few big names within the families, and you kind of need to know that these are the These are their front businesses.
You kind of need Elvis.
And the Rat Pack.
Yeah, the Rat Pack.
There's an organization you can't join. Sorry, it's exclusive, yep. Son.
You're going to grind rip for them forever. Or they will
Sammy Davis Jr.
anything.
He drinks so many gin and tonics to get into that.
Oh,
I bet somebody has played the Rat Pack role-playing game. just been like, I'm a level 10 Frank Sinatra.
I'm actually kind of hoping that you're going to run it for us.
I will. I'll run it for you. Hell, if I wasn't already running Warcraft at the convention, I'd run it there.
Awesome. Three slots. You only run one game.
I'm not going to be awake for the first one. I'm going to be drunk for the third one.
Okay.
Wow, that's going to be quality.
Yep.
Excellent. Now, I like to think of, you know, if I'm for these side organizations, coming back to my point, most of the time I just think of them as PCs. What are their goals? What do they have access to? What, you know, what can they do for and against the PCs? And if I need to go into more detail, you know, the hierarchy, you know, where they have offices, what have you, I make sure that's available to me if I need to go there. But I hate to spend time working on stuff the players don't see and don't care about.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I agree with you. You know, though, you kind of said something there that hits on another thing that I like to accomplish with factions, or like about factions, is they, in a way, operate as a person, like you said, because they have a certain set of goals or, you know, those commonalities.
Several hit locations.
But
several hit locations.
At the same time, they're bigger than one person.
PPC.
For example, I was running a game fairly recently. It was a science fiction game. Adam was playing in it. Molina was playing in it. And there was a faction. And I can't go into the what they were trying to accomplish. I may use this plot again at some point. But there was a faction that was trying to accomplish...
You're just a plot recycler, Dan Ripperger. Certain,
hey, if it's a great place to grab inspiration from, man. If people don't use it, or if this group's never seen it before, it's a great way to keep yourself running out of ideas.
But Adam's been in all of your games and seen all your stuff.
No, Adam's in all my games, and they die about two games later, either because of interpersonal drama or scheduling problems.
Hey, because I wasn't there.
Hey, you know, I seem to have sales. Gamed successfully for 7 years without incident. I'm not taking the blame for this. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not. I'm just explaining.
I'm an awesome player.
I'm not blaming.
I'm just putting that on the table.
You've not been the problem.
I know.
So I'm not blaming you.
There's not a doubt in my mind that you're not blaming me. I'm just putting that
on
the table.
I'm just stating a fact that Adam has not actually sat through much of any of my GMing.
I'm shaking off your
but,
accusations.
But I'm saying, though, that in this game, there was a faction that's trying to accomplish something, but because of the fact there were multiple people involved, first of all, if they whacked one of them, there's still other people to carry it on. My plot didn't have to be about how big of a badass this particular guy is. Yeah, I didn't have to sit there and flaunt the Baron von Badass in front of them. If they kill a guy, or they eliminate a guy, or they talk a guy even out of doing it, which I leave the door open to, that they could just convince him don't do this anymore, there's still a movement that's going on without that person. And secondly, I think it allows for a great deal of nuance within the plot.
Drink, everybody.
Nuance.
Because
I'm already empty.
Because you can have, they don't all have to agree. That they may all agree on an end, but they're not all going to agree on the means, or they're all going to agree on exactly the way there. So you can have within an organization, let's say there's five people that want to bring about the end of the world.
And there's one Cylon who won't recall her ship.
But but each of them are doing it for different reasons, or they're doing it in different ways, or, you know, whatever. And so you can have eventually within your enemies, they start internally fighting, or they start playing off of each other, or whatever. It gives you as a GM a great deal of flexibility to add some personality to the bad
guys.
Yeah,
you can have the factions hate each other. Yeah. One of the cool things that the Spiderweb software games do, Luke, you play these,
yes,
is they have a whole lot of cool factions, and a lot of them don't like each other.
Well, I'm even talking about within a faction.
That works within a faction.
Even within a faction, members that don't like each other or can't agree on what the means are to a particular end. Rome.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the entirety of Roman history.
And by doing that,
you gain
to give the PCs interesting choices. Do you want to ally with one of your enemies? You know, the enemy of an enemy is a friend. Is that how we're going to play this game?
Right.
Kind of tapping off the point you tapped off my point.
Man, we're tapping each other a lot this episode.
Beautiful. It's like Brokeback Mountain.
Wow.
With Adam.
It was a good movie.
I'm not saying it was a bad movie.
Okay, go on.
All right.
All right, Luke's tapping me. Continue.
I did have a point here. The point was that you mentioned that even if one PC dies, it can still go on. One of the biggest, you know...
My heart will go on, Luke.
Thank you, John. I know it will. One of the biggest things that makes you suspend your disbelief in a role-playing game is when one of the PCs dies and you have to bring in somebody new. And this comes up all the time, because all of a sudden it's just a new guy you just amazingly trust. And enter into your
PC on his forehead.
Because he has a big PC on his forehead. When you have an organization, when the PCs are part of an organization, you have an excellent in for that character right there. It's
right.
Another member of the organization. Like, again, going back to one of the first games I mentioned coming on, is Greg Stolze's Reign, where you run a big organization. If your PC dies, you still have put experience points into the organization. It's something you have invested in, is still in the game, and you can make another character for it to continue along that adventure.
I've done that without even knowing I was doing it.
Same thing with NPCs, that if you, once again, like I said earlier, you whack the bad guy, all of a sudden there's another person within that organization that can rise up or has got his own angle or whatever from which to continue what's doing, what they've been doing.
The angle of their dangle is inversely proportional to the heat of their meat.
Nice.
What?
Think about it.
Think about, well, I thought don't about think it, about it, actually. But
I figured it out, but the what was for its verbosity.
All right, so where do you guys look for inspiration for your factions?
It depends on what game I'm playing. I mean, with Vampire, it's pretty much... All these vampire books are all about exploring these factions. This is awesome.
Well, okay, if you've got a pre-written setting, there you go. Your factions are right there. The most you may have to do is flesh them out or give them a little more depth or personality than maybe what the game gave them. For example, if you grab the Forgotten Realms, let's just say the world book, and that's all you have, there may not be quite enough in there on the Red Wizards of Thay to really play them in great detail. So you might have to write some of your own material.
Mm-hmm. Those Dumbledores are in the 3.5 DMG, I think. They're moving up. They're becoming more mainstream.
But let's say for a minute that you're dealing with factions that aren't in the book. You're creating your own game or you're creating your own factions for a particular area.
Well, it all comes down to what do you need them for? How are they going to serve your plot and the world?
Yeah,
because that is number one, is if I'm adding a faction, there has to be a purpose for it. There has to be a reason for them to exist. And more so, there has to be a reason for them to exist vis-a-vis my players are going to encounter something they do or some way they've affected the world.
I also tend to extrapolate from real history or real groups. I'm a firm believer in the whole truth is stranger than fiction thing. That I mean, there's truth is stranger than friction. Truth is stranger than fiction. Say that one five times fast. And if you look throughout history at the various secret societies, political movements, political parties, religious sects, that there is...
Religious sects?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Missionary.
Holy prostitutes.
There is a whole host of stuff that you can draw from there, whether it be organizations as a whole, whether it be goals, whether it be the means you're using to accomplish those goals, or whether it's even just individuals, that this one particular guy would make such a neat leader for this particular organization or such a neat character with
them. The trouble you get into there is that if you go by the most popular factions in history, most of those leaders have been done and translated into role-playing games to death. Okay,
that's why I gather all of my inspiration from the junior novelization of Logan's Run.
God, I love Logan's Run. Thank you. We are the same person.
We are the same person.
That's all there is to it. Logan's Run is so good.
1977 Special Effects Award.
Didn't want
not Star Wars.
Never seen the movie. Read the books, all of them.
You've never seen Logan's Run?
No, but I've read the books.
What the hell? I haven't read. I didn't even know books existed.
Yeah,
I was just
the books are way.
My butt.
The Logan's Run movie is just the first book. It goes on way farther
than
that.
We gotta have further. What's that kid's name?
Logan's Run Readathon.
No, a movie-thon.
Fear the Boot Book Club.
Fear the Boot Book. Actually, I wanted to start one of those, but
Fear the Book Club.
Whatever, the British guy. We got to watch him go at it. Sanctuary.
Anyway, I agree with you, Luke, that if you take the ones that are too apparent, then, yeah, they've been archetyped and stereotyped and beaten absolutely to death. Mafia is a great example.
Who's beaten to death?
Adolf Hitler is my villain.
Aha, exactly.
Yeah. The Nazis. The Nazis is another one that has been absolutely beaten to death.
Goodwin's faction.
What do you mean? They give great XP.
But you can dig around and find some interesting things. Like, for example, if you look at all the secret societies and mystery religions that were pervading Europe leading up to World War II, the things that inspired Hitler, you know, now those have not been done very much. In fact, very few people even know a lot of details about them unless you're really into that time period.
I heard the trilogy of movies, The Skulls, was based upon that.
The Skulls. Get out. I heard the Jets and the Sharks were loosely based on Europe and Germany fighting each other.
No, actually, it was the Spanish-American War.
The world's most effeminate gang war.
I love Scrubs.
What?
Scrubs made fun of it. The whole thing. Okay. Oh. The surgeons and the doctors, they got into a big snap fight where they danced down the halls at each other.
I've not seen that
was
episode.
Was that during the musical episode?
No. This was just a random episode where they were snapping at each other. That show is so funny.
It is. It's a good show.
I can't stand musicals. But anyway, that's a whole other topic for a whole other show. If you dig up some of the more obscure factions from history, you know, you really start reading around. I think there is a lot of material there that can be mined that's not been beaten to death.
And then Dan can give you Dan facts all night long.
I can. Yeah, you name the faction. I'll just tell you all kinds of random and useless things about it.
Hmm. Interesting. I heard Calvin Coolidge started the unions, just in general.
I heard Ronald Reagan ate the unions.
I built a wall that he later tore down.
Yes.
And then they made a movie about how he didn't tear down the wall.
They made a movie called Newt Rockne, Tear Down This Wall.
Newt Rockne, Tear Down This Wall. All right.
I got one thing. Well, it's short. Hey, we brought up Keith Curtis.
You don't have to tell us
that. I meant to throw this in, but after we had a little episode with him, and after it aired, I'm like, you know what? It's been a long time since I visited his website to look at his homebrew setting. I remember liking it a lot. So I went back. Guess what? We boofed his website. It was gone. Like, there are too many people who linked to it, because for at least a day or two, I couldn't get to anything.
Dude, we farked Keith Curtis.
We did.
I didn't know we wielded that kind of...
I don't know, but unless he comes on our forum and say, no, dude, I just took it down for a couple days. It was just bad timing.
I'll say that may be what it is, because he told me, because when we said we were going to link it, he's like, man, I haven't updated this thing forever. I need to update it.
Maybe that was it, but I tried for a day to get over there.
Maybe he just took it down.
Keith, I bet everyone else is sick as hell of you. I think you've gone three episodes in a row. That
with
might
a straight mention.
Be
ding, ding, ding,
straight
ding, ding.
Mention, yeah.
Well, as I was say, his campaign setting is fantastic. When I reread it again, I'm like, this is really cool. And it's one of those things where I'm like, crap, I would run this, but I'm so jealous I didn't think about it. I didn't think it up. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't think of it because I want this to be my own. I have trouble with that when running settings. I really do.
Really?
If it's not my, if it's something I really like, but it's not mine, I just can't do it. I want to do something that cool myself.
You know what saved me from that? Completely ignoring
laziness?
Yeah, well, no, actually the reverse.
Because that's what saved me.
Completely ignoring the industry for about 10 years and doing nothing but writing my own games.
Well, I write plenty of my own settings, but so, I pay attention to a lot of others. So
I've written so many of my own settings that I...
Epic of Rhizos.
Well, now, of course, that's changing because now I'm starting to pay attention to the industry again.
Epic of Mysos.
Kind of have to. But
Epic
anyway.
Of MySpace.
Three epics
all right.
of Tomso.
So. Anyway, well, before we sign out, let me go ahead and toss a shout out to Phil and Dave over at Insert Coin Live.
Oh.
Just because he brought me a six-pack of Bud Light.
Insert-coinlive.com. Okay, so Coin Live is all run together. So it's insert-coinlive.com, video game podcast. And they should be...
Spam his forum with pictures of the dirigible train.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't tell nice. Him I said to.
They should also be giving away, listen. If you have an Xbox 360 and want to win a copy of Project Silphied, Tex gave us a copy that we actually passed down to them that they're supposed to be reviewing and then giving away. You took that from
I didn't take it, but I was talking to Phil today. He's like, I got Project Silphied. I assumed from the way he was talking that he was playing it. I'm not sure.
No, I thought the plan was he was going to play it, review
said,
it, and then give it away.
He was going to play it, put it back in the box, and then give it
shrink
away.
Shrink wrap it again.
Got
give it away. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that makes more
we
sense because I was talking to days like, he's like, oh, I'm playing Project Silphied. And I'm like, oh, were you supposed to give that away?
So anyway, awesome. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Dogs rule.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.